Come on, come on.
Sunsets and the ghettos play. Long nights on a hot summer's block, where you sip your brew and never touch your glass. This is for eyes that cry like yours and learn to smile again. Rise above the pain. This is for you and your crew, the ones that's true. Will always love you, no matter what you do.
Spitfire breathes the lives of women of color in Montreal. We come together to say no to the silencing of our voices.
Welcome to Spitfire, Women of Color Radio, every last Wednesday of the month at 6 p.m. on CKUT 90.3 FM.
We are in studio with Spitfire hosts Mercedes, Victoria, Gao, Alyssa, Lily, and we'd love to welcome back our longtime member, Simi. Hey!
Yo.
We missed you. So, Mercedes, we're going to talk about her piece that she always throws down every month, which is on the Boko Haram kidnapping in Nigeria and the media's depiction of it.
Next, right before the internet blew up watching Solange beat Jay-Z in TMZ's elevator video on May 6th, renowned feminist and radical critical thinker Bell Hooks was back at the New School for another residency. Hooks was joined by black feminist thinkers and drew controversy when the conversation turned to Beyonce. Is Beyonce a terrorist? We'll discuss Hook's use of the T-word towards one of the most universally revered pop culture figures of our time. May is also Asian Heritage Month. In honor of Asian Heritage Month, we will be featuring tracks from several influential women from the Asian diaspora.
All that and more coming up right now on Spitfire Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Bedili hai मुझको है दिल का गुरूर तू ये माने के न माने लोग मानेंगे जरूर ये मेरा दीवाना पन है या
Welcome back to Spitfire Radio. The time is 6:08 p.m. and we're right here in CKUT. That was Yamira Divananpan Hai by Shashila Raman, a British Indian singer who has released 5 albums and was nominated for a BBC World Music Award in 2006. The song you just heard was from her second album, Love Trap.
So, time for some Spitfire headlines. One of the news items that recently grabbed our attention was the massacre at the UC Santa Barbara. So, what happened was a California man killed 7 people, including himself, after posting a video to YouTube saying he was seeking retribution against all women for rejecting his sexual advances. Elliot Rogers stabbed 3 people to death at his apartment Friday before driving to a sorority house at the University of California at Santa Barbara, where he killed 2 women outside. He drove through town, continuing to fire on pedestrians before dying of what authorities called a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Hours before the attack, Roger posted a chilling video saying he planned to attack you girls, quote-unquote, for what he called the crime, quote-unquote, of not being attracted to him.
Roger's misogynistic comments sparked a viral response on Twitter with more than 1 million tweets using the hashtag YesAllWomen, seeking to put the attack within a wider context as everyday harassment and violence. We mourn this tragic gender-motivated loss, and our hearts and best wishes go out to the victims and their loved ones. This latest incident
is the latest in a long run of gender-based violence incidents, and it must be stopped. This past week marks the 100th anniversary of the infamous deportation of the SS Komatagawa Maru. 100 years ago, the Komatagawa Maru sailed into Vancouver Harbor with 276 would-be British immigrants, many of whom were veterans of the British Army. To make a long, sordid story, because the would-be immigrants of the Komatagawa Maru were actually of Indian descent, in other words, not white, the government reacted by putting into place exclusionary and white supremacist legislation that would effectively keep South Asian immigrants from coming to Canada.
The appalling treatment of the 376 passengers aboard the Komatagawa Maru, affected by the continuing journey regulation, is often talked about as a dark chapter in Canadian history, when in actuality, race-based discrimination and white supremacy continued to inform immigration policies from the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1923 through to the disgusting injustice of Canada's migrant worker programs and policies. So here at Spitfire, we are commemorating the Komatagawa Maru event by sharing some media information that's come out recently. Check out Ali Kazemi's reflections on the Komatagawa Maru on www.thestar.com, and also a press release by a coalition of migrant justice advocates on www.komatagawamarulegacy.tumblr.com. You can also take a look at the national statement released by over 100 South Asian advocacy groups on the Komatagawa Maru centenary, calling for the government of Canada to immediately reverse the moratorium on migrant workers in the food sector imposed since April 24th.
So right now, I'm going to be talking to you guys all about the mass kidnapping of 276 Nigerian schoolgirls by Boko Haram on April 14th of this year. What I want to touch upon is the media's reaction, but more specifically, Western media's reaction to the unfolding of these events and why I found it so problematic. One thing is for sure about media coverage these days: sad stories make headlines. Moreover, sad stories from what we as first world citizens consider third world, war-torn, or impoverished countries make headlines, especially when political turmoil is thrown into the mix. From their western balconies, viewers look into the front yards of these countries and tisk and task and shake their heads in empathy at the unfortunate situations that these countries are experiencing, all the while muttering to themselves, "I feel sorry for them. I feel their pain. I know what they're going through. I'm going to donate, protest, raise awareness, or any other phrase that makes them feel better about themselves as human beings," but completely erasing their privilege. Bring Back Our Girls is one of those many instances where Western media feels the need to throw in their hats into the awareness-raising race. When this story broke, every major news station caught wind of it, along with every celebrity, social media network, and self-proclaimed activist. As a result, the hashtag Bring Back Our Girls began trending. Everyone from Michelle Obama to Alicia Keys was photographed holding a piece of paper with the hashtag on it and a forlorn look of loss. People started changing profile pictures and sharing posts with the words Bring Back Our Girls on them. Some even called out the kidnappers and publicly denounced their honor as men. hence the second trending hashtag, Real Men Don't Buy Girls, began circulating, starting with male celebrities like Sean Penn down to your average citizen. There was coverage of U.S. President Obama assuring the world that Boko Haram's actions would not go unnoticed, along with many protests by Nigerians and Americans alike for something to be done. Now, don't get me wrong. It is great that the story got the exposure it deserved and that the international community was so willing to get involved. It also shows the way that social media can be used as a positive tool for activism and collectivity to create an awareness about things that are going on in the world that are not part of our own personal bubbles. Some examples would be the other trending hashtags around social media sites, such as hashtag we are, insert respective university here, that was used to raise awareness about the rampant cases of racism on university campuses experienced by black students who attended the university. Or even hashtag Jessica's Tux, that brought forth the controversial story of Jessica Urbina, a Sacred Heart Cathedral prep senior who had her yearbook photo pulled because she chose to wear a tux to her senior prom. It brought about awareness about gender and identity discrimination that is ingrained in educational institutions. But we also have to look at it from another side. The side where we become selective of stories we cover or what can be considered relative news or important. The side where we question when we yell out, bring back our girls, whose girls are we talking about, whose girls are they, and what place do we have in calling them our own. We must keep in mind that events like this go unnoticed every day. We can look to the issue of sex trafficking, domestic abuse, or prostitution, where women are often forced into these situations with no way out or go missing without anyone knowing. This happens right under our noses in this very country, yet we are not up in arms about trying to recover or fight for these women. And yes, in the interest of this show and my personal standpoint, I am referring to the many women of color who go through this on a daily basis. Nevertheless, I cannot speak for all women, nor their struggles, or even try to relate their stories to each other or the Nigerian girls. I'm not Gloria Steinem. I don't lump women into the same category. But what I can do is point out the ways in which people answer to the call of arms when an opportunity to show one's human compassion comes around. It is one thing to say that you are generally interested in finding a solution to bring these girls back. Then fine. By all means, promote this story. Rally and protest. Petition the government. Get people together to join the cause. But when you're using the story as a way to meet your social activist quota for the year, then stop. Step away from your computers, step away from the barricades, but most importantly, step away from yourselves. Think about what you're really doing when you start hashtagging Bring Back Our Girls. Are you part of this movement to prove to everyone that you care? Are you part of the media hype because you want to follow the latest story? Or are you part of this story because you realize that these girls are human beings, not PR tools, and that they could be in potential danger, already missing or worse, and want to do something that ensures that efforts are being made to recover them? The girls have names, faces, and families just like we do, and you must think what you would do if this scenario was happening to your sister, friend, or cousin. I doubt you would want people sensationalizing a very serious situation such as this. On the upside, if you have been following the story on social media, i.e. CNN or The Guardian, the location of the girls has been found according to Nigeria's Air Chief Marshal Alex Bide. However, although the location is known to the military, they will not be revealing it to the public or to the parents. However, this report has not been confirmed. So with this revelation in sight, what do we on the outside do? Did the hashtag work? Was there enough pressure on the government to do something? After all, if history is any indication of people's interest in social justice / activism, interest will fade if things go unchanged or credibility is questioned. Do you remember Kony 2012? Not many people do, and I doubt those people who hopped onto the Kony bandwagon care about it anymore either. That is, if they haven't forgotten about it already. That movement proved that it could unify people in a short period of time to find and try a war criminal without any people informing themselves about the cause. It also showed how people can get caught up in the superhero complex and completely overlook what is actually going on in the world. So I guess all that is left for us to do is wait and hope that someone with the right intentions brings back our girls. So my question to you guys is, what did you all think about the media coverage of the Bring Back Our Girls Nigerian kidnapping scenario? Do you think it was worthwhile? Do you think it did more harm than good? Do you think it's something that should be covered on the daily alongside the missing child who goes missing in Canada? Is it something that people will forget about in a month's time? What do you think?
I think actually it would be kind of interesting to go back or rewind a bit and think about how Michelle Obama's reaction impacted the whole campaign and how that kind of symbolizes what you were talking about in your piece and how there's kind of this disconnect and also this privilege that is completely erased in her equating her kind of raising her children and how she would feel devastated if her children were gone, and then relating it to, you know, kids who are miles away and don't have nearly as much privilege as Sasha and Malia. Malia. Yeah. Malia? Yeah. I don't know if anyone wants to jive off that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I was really, it was really unfortunate that First Lady Obama chose that particular moment and the words that she did choose when she spoke, because there's been so many times where I've hoped that she said something. You know, I really hoped after the Trayvon Martin verdict, the George Zimmerman verdict rather, she would have said something. And I know President Obama did, but there have been so many moments where I feel like, based on what you can infer from her biography and her experience growing up in Chicago, that I felt like she must obviously have some feeling about this, but she never spoke. And just the way she came at it as kind of the mom in chief, which is a role that she asserts a lot, I just kind of found it completely out of touch. And, you know, like, I don't like the use of our in the hashtag. Like, that really bothers me. It's like, they're not yours. I don't know. Like, it's not ours. This is, we don't have this, like, beautiful world community where right. we're all one. We're one people. I mean, we all want, I think a lot of us want to think we live in that world. But it just rings really false. And I feel like First Lady Obama, unfortunately, picked up on a lot of that kind of symbolism in her remarks.
Right.
I mean, in a sense, she has to. I feel like as First Lady, that's kind of, that comes with the territory, and she has to assume that things are all hunky-dory and that, you know, we're all, like, one world, because she is, like, you know, wife to the leader of the free world. So it's essentially keeping up appearances.
Yeah. I think another problematic aspect of it was that whole idea of the representation of these sort of poor African girls. One of the main images that was used was an image taken by a photographer of a young girl who had no relationship whatsoever mm-hmm. to what was happening in Chibok. It had no relationship to, was not even a Nigerian girl or a Muslim girl. So it was sort of that whole resonance of this imagery that kept being perpetuated over and over again. And which, I guess, drew this emotional response, which I think there was a little, there was a lot of references of this sort of, oh, these girls, and it was a very sort of emotional response, which didn't necessarily result in any sort of solutions that made sense or any solutions right. that anybody really wanted to see happen. So, yeah.
So what do you think? Oh, go for it.
Sorry, I don't want to...
No. Go.
Well, I was going to introduce a different aspect, which was just like, you know, just what we sort of acknowledged in the headlines today earlier with the... Yes to All Women hashtag mm-hmm. and the social media activism that was going on with that.
Right.
I actually feel like it's sort of like, it shows like the contrast in the way that like that hashtag opened up a discussion, allowed people to participate and engage and sort of open up the issue of like deep-seated misogyny in Western culture. And I feel like it's really positive and it's active. And it, mm-hmm. whereas this kind of hashtag activism is really just sort of like self-congratulatory, sort of like, I'm just pinning this on my Facebook and I've done all the work now. Right. And
And how much of that do you think is because the people participating in the Yes All Women hashtag are coming from someplace real? This is women all over North America, right? Who are
all over the world,
who are being attacked, who have been attacked, who have been had death threats when they refuse male advances, who are street harassed on a daily basis, who are groped, who are, you know, in living in situations of domestic violence. So to me, it's because, I mean, I really resonated with the hashtag because I've been in situations where I felt like my safety was threatened because I refused in male advances.
Definitely.
And so it's coming from someplace like real, and I feel like it's inherently you can inherently feel that and sense that even in the world of hashtags on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Whereas this Bring Back Our Girls is, yeah, it's like
it's if it was attached to, say, like a wider movement and recognition that it's happening everywhere, like bring back all girls, you know, or bring back all of our girls, i.e. like, you know, enveloping and giving space to all the various movements that are struggling for representation and recognition within, you know, various communities. Like, I can just think of the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women campaign and how we want our women to be brought back to us, our children to be brought back to us, or, you know, so like what, you know, like, so it's almost like that it could have been a different kind of campaign, but instead it was just this like sort of commodified experience.
And I guess another part of it is that it seems that it's now old news, right? It's no longer trending. It's no longer trendy. I think there's a clear connection between that and Yes, All Women, but that's not a connection that's being made at all. So, again.
So you think it's more of a passing phase than something that people are really interested in?
Well, it's actually interesting that, like, Yes, All Women, which has gotten so much play, is not tied to the hashtag Bring Back Our Girls as, like, you know, these are all part of, you know, the violence against women around the world. So let's, like, connect the dots here and create, like, a comprehensive sort of, you know, analysis as well as, like, action against, you know, this in a more comprehensive way, I guess. You know, why are we, why are all these events so disassociated? And it just allows, you know, the systems of patriarchy or misogyny or violence to continue because we're not actually like looking at the system that perpetuates all of these, you know, disassociated or these associated incidents.
Can I just push back on the point you made at the beginning that this got a lot of media attention? It actually didn't, right? And it was very, it was initially, the shooting was framed as like a crazed shooter, very similar to a lot of the other mass shootings that have happened recently. But it wasn't painted as a gender-based attack initially. It took a lot of women actually speaking out at the way the media initially covered it as kind of like just another shooting and not like a gender-specific, arguably active patriarchal terrorism against women. And we are running out of time, so we're gonna have to wrap up. But
so with that, well, you pretty much had the last word and you ended it well, so we would love to continue this
patriarchal terrorism
this conversation further, but for now this is it. But there's more coming up on Spitfire.
Thanks, Mercedes.
This is Michelle Ndege Ocello, and you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Keep it locked. But around on the run, his daddy's home. Daddy's sweet
little boy, just a little too sweet. And every night the man shall be... Get ready for Pop Montreal's Spring Pop on May 31st at Place de la Gare Jean Talon in front of Metro Parc. Free outdoor fun for all. Yoga class with the Montreal Yoga Fest from 10 till 11:30. Music and kids activities from noon till 6, featuring music from Pierre Quenders, Shawit, Ramsey, Landis, and A Pigeon. Rain or shine. Also, don't miss the Puce Pop Craft Fair from May 30th till June 1st at the Saint-Denis Church, Metro Laurier. For all the info, popmontreal.com.
Spitfire breathes the lives of women of color in Montreal.
We had to speak our truths and to say no to the silencing of our voices in a racist and sexist society.
Spoken word. Interview.
What's that?
Hot.
Spitfire breathes the lives of women of color in Montreal.
Tune in to Spitfire every last Wednesday of the month from 6 to 7 p.m. on 90.3 FM CKUT Radio.
Come around.
easily intimidated by the lifestyle my hard work created. Pretty as it seems, it's not always peaches and cream. I want someone real, a little blue-collar work, never hurt nobody. And I'm setting my sights on you until you come around. I know you see me on the video, I know you heard me on the radio, but you still don't pay me no attention. Listening to everything your boys mention. She's this and she's that, she's a freak. Got a different man every day of the week. It's cool, not trying to put a rush on you. I have to let you know that I got a crush on you. Hey, yo, daddy, won't you go get a bag of food? Bring it on over, let me cook for you. Fill up your bang bang belly. My love tastes good and plenty. So many things I wanna share with you.
Welcome back. You are listening to Spitfire. That was Crush on You by Anne One. The time is 6:30 and it's gorgeous out. Anne One is an LA-based musician. She released two critically acclaimed albums in South Korea, Infinite Wave of Love and Phoenix Rising. She is currently working on her US debut EP. Her music is available on her SoundCloud page.
Thank you, Victoria. Okay, guys, not to get sensationalistic about it, but is Beyonce a terrorist?
Dum, dum, dum.
So on May 6th, renowned feminist, radical critical thinker, and Spitfire favorite, Bell Hooks, was back at the New School for another residency. As you'll recall, in the fall, we recounted her first residency at the New School, where she had a conversation about reclaiming the Black female voice with MSNBC host and professor Melissa Harris Perry. This time, Hooks was joined by three other feminist thinkers. I can't remember all of their names, so I'm not going to recount them, but you can look at it on the New School page. And she drew a lot of controversy and harsh reactions to calling or referring to Beyonce as a terrorist. Now, we're going to play the clip and in its full context so that people don't just think that Bell Hooks was calling Beyonce a terrorist in the kind of way that terrorism and terrorist as words in the post 9/11 context are used ubiquitously. So check out the clip. In this clip, she's in an exchange with Janet Mock, who is a Black trans woman writer and revolutionary, and you'll see how she says it, and then we'll talk about it.
I think about at the height of the 90s pop boom, just bear with me, this is my age. I watch TRL all the time, and seeing Destiny's Child for the first time on TRL in a space where it was only NSYNC and Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera, and everyone was blonde and choreographed and everything, and to see them come in as this, as I guess my generation's supremes for black girls, spoke to me on so many levels to have that representation as a 15-year-old to see. And so I think I have a different relationship with Beyonce because we're a year and a half apart, specifically. And it's not that I don't see her without critique, because I do. I see so many things that bother me about, you know, like the drunken love lyric. Why did she let her husband say that about anime? You know, all of this stuff. I wish that that was not in there. But also having Partition come out in December, like a couple months before my book came out, when I'm writing about sex work and sexual abuse and issues with my body and my sexuality, it was freeing to have Beyonce and showing her ass and owning her body and claiming that space. That meant a lot to me because it gave me the okay as someone who I looked up to since I was 15 to have that. And I'm not saying that she is not participating in all of this, but I do think that there is power in her leaving her father. And I don't think that she's going straight into Jay-Z's hands, but that documentary was about leaving her father and saying, I will not let you give this distilled image of me anymore. And that resonates with me on so many levels too. And so we can continue to critique, but that was my thoughts on that.
My concern though is that whole idea, again, when we think about containment, that we say, oh, but this person who is doing major harm, let's say, because I see a part of Beyonce that is in fact anti-feminist, that is assaulting, that is a terrorist, in the sense of, especially in terms of the impact on young girls. I actually feel like the major assault on feminism in our society has come from visual media and from television and videos. I mean, just think, where would do we even know of late any powerful man of any color who's come out with some tirade against feminism? The tirades against feminism occur so much in the image-making business, in what we see.
So that was Janet Mock and Bell Hooks exchanging about 45 minutes into the dialogue that occurred at May 6th at the New School in New York City. And you'll see that she doesn't just blanketly call Beyonce a terrorist. She's talking about Beyonce in a kind of patriarchal terroristic kind of way in the context of being an anti-feminist image maker. Not to say that all of Beyonce and all of what Beyonce does is antithetical to feminism, but aspects of her visual image making. So there were a number of really intense reactions in both mainstream and kind of blogosphere, YouTubeosphere, Twittersphere areas. And one of them that struck me was to dismiss what Bell Hooks said on account of her inability to understand her feminist contemporaries. So Bell Hooks is born in the 50s, is born at the time when segregation still exists in the United States and Canada, and kind of grows up and matures as a writer and a thinker in the 70s and 80s. And so Beyonce is in her early 30s, is not really, you know, a feminist thinker in terms of producing literature or producing theory, although you could argue that her videos are quite theoretical. I'm not going to make that argument, but I feel like you could make that argument. So what do you guys think? Is the comments and the way that Hooks is reading what Beyonce is doing, particularly her latest work, which was released in December 2013, is that just Bell Hooks' inability as an elder in the black feminist, you know, imaginary? Is that her inability to understand what Beyonce is doing in Beyonce's new wave of feminism?
I don't think it's her inability to kind of relate to this newfound feminism that Beyonce's starting to body. I think it's her kind of comparing what she went through and what she experienced and what feminism was for black women back then compared to what it means for black women today. And I feel like what she's trying to point out is that with the newer generation coming up now, it's feminism in the context of women of color is no longer going to be what women like herself or let's say Mohanty or all the rest of them would be. It would be Beyonce and every other self-proclaimed feminist, and this idea of that I can still be sexual, but I can still adhere to the patriarchal values and say what a man thinks a woman is and still love that and still own it, but yet I still want to be independent. I still want to be my own person. I can still own my body. I'm not this image of the sexualized Black woman, yet I will be sexual. So I think in a way it will confuse the younger generations, let's say my generation now, because let's say myself as a women's studies major, like if I hadn't, I guess speaking from personal experience, if I wasn't someone who looked at the broader context of things and just went at face value, let's say if Beyonce came out as a feminist, I'm like, okay, so this is feminism, this is the new face of feminism, then I would totally be discarding the history behind, let's say, Black women in feminism and the relationship mm-hmm. that we have in terms of how people in the media perceive Black women or, and their bodies and even self. The comments that were probably made are probably unfounded. So I don't think there are comments that should be taken into consideration into the conversation, unless it's something that is founded on a sound argument. Not that just bell hooks can't relate to our times and bell hooks is older. Like, if you can make an argument for why she was wrong in her statement, then fine. But if not, I don't think it would, it should affect the outcome.
Yeah, go ahead, Sydney.
I think what's really interesting is that where this new wave of feminism that, I mean, keeps getting referred to, this sort of pop culture feminism light is basically feminism, you know, being made to look sexy. Mm. I think it's very sort of, it's sort of this new bright shiny thing, and I think we need to recognize that for people, for I guess for pop culture, right? The feminism they want to see and the feminism that is cool and trendy is a feminism that is complicit with patriarchy, right? Mm. It's a feminism.
So is it feminist? That's the question, right?
Exactly. It's not really. It's like I said, it's feminism light. It's like, it's kind of like reality TV versus
reality.
Versus reality, right? It's like, I don't know, feminism 2.0. I don't know. But I think it is a point of departure, but it is not really, it's not what we aspire to. It is feminism from a male gaze. It is kind of like sexuality under a male lens. So this, when we're talking about autonomy and freedom and independence, we're talking about it within the boundaries of patriarchy. We're talking about it within the boundaries of what is being sexy from the male gaze.
So it's not feminism then, or it's like patriarchy co-opted by feminism, called feminism, and we need
basically
to ditch the term women.
Basically.
Well, it's not, though, just that, because it's, there's lots of types of feminism that are colluding with patriarchy, right? So it's not that in and of itself that makes, you know, Beyonce an anti-feminist image maker. But I just, thinking about what Janet Mock said, and I love Janet Mock. So Janet, if you're listening, and I know that you are, I just want to say that I love you. But it really struck me that she thought that Partition, which is a song about seducing or being seduced by your man in the back of a limo, and showing her ass, as Janet Mock says, I didn't find that video empowering. I actually found it quite hyper hetero and boring, in the sense of it's just taking, you know, compulsory femininity to the extreme. And showing it in a way that is a little bit pushing the edge of what you would see on like a typical top 40 music video set if there are women artists. So I was a little like, is this really about reclaiming? And is this about like taking up space? Or is this just about like performing hyper femininity almost like in drag as like a cis woman? And I don't know. I just don't buy this argument of like, I'm taking up space and with my ass because I'm showing all of it and this is empowering. I don't agree with that.
Well, also that, like, I agree with what you're saying, and I think it also has to do with when people think Beyonce, especially in that song, because then there's just an entire segment in French talking about, like, if, like, she likes sex, and, like, feminists like sex, and
oh,
if
yeah.
you like
Est-ce
it.
Que tu aimes le
exactly,
sex?
And, like, how people think that because you're feminist, you can't like sex, and then I think in that part, because that comes right after the whole booty popping reveal, so I think that was what she was trying to do in terms of, like, kind of like hushing all the murmurs and the disapproval of her coming out of the feminist being like, I can still be feminist, but I can still be sexy. I don't have to be one or the other. And then I think it goes back to what you said, how there's different forms of femininity, how people decide to identify with femininity and being a feminist. Because then again, it comes to thing like, how do you define feminism?
So I just have one thing to say. If you actually listen to the entire 2-hour clip on YouTube or watch it of Bell Hooks at the New School, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. You should. And you know anything about Bell Hooks, like her feminism is it's not just for a certain class of people. It's not for a certain race of people or a certain segment of women out there. It's for everybody.
For sure.
And so I feel like, you know, when she was making a criticism of Beyoncé, she was really calling attention also to the fact that within this ostensible, like, white supremacist capitalist patriarchy that we live in right now, there is a certain kind of, like, ideal that's promoted that we all strive for. Mm-hmm. And that kind of captivates all of our attentions and essentially enslaves us to it. And Beyoncé is kind of, like, this icon for that. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but we're not all going to be like Beyoncé. You know, mm-hmm. we're not all going to have the money and that kind of power and that sexuality. And I feel like she is doing young girls a disservice because not all women are going to have access to that particular right. form of sexual power and class. And, you know, like, there's just, I don't know, I just find that she's, like, Beyoncé is really problematic on so many different levels and does a great disservice to young Black girls because, you know, just even the way that she embraces and quote unquote reclaims her Black body mm-hmm. is like to almost like kind of you know, straighten her hair and be blonde, and you know, there's a lot of things there.
Do everything she's not supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
So
say what you were gonna say before about the holding hostage. That was a good point. Remember, you said Beyoncé is a terrorist because she's holding compulsory femininity hostage.
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant.
And that's so. This is what Bell Hooks was gesturing throughout her entire 2 hours with those brilliant ladies. Like, how do we imagine different forms of like feminism, different forms of power, and, you know, female power and female sexuality, you know, or female embodiedness that's not necessarily like hypersexualized or, you know, like, I guess, like, celibate, you know, because her choice is like, let's just be celibate. Mm-hmm. But, like, obviously, we're not all interested in being celibate. But, like, what's the alternative here? You know, like, so I'm interested in people like exploring in between those extremes and maybe like apart, right?
Mm-hmm. And
I think, and that's what I was meaning by hostage, like that Beyoncé was like taking up that space and then defining it, and we just have to follow, and right. that's a great disservice.
So I think like later on in the talk, Bell Hooks goes on to say like, what would you wear and what would you look like if you were liberated? And I think that's sort of the idea that she wants to talk about this terrorism for visual imagery. Like, what would you look like? What would you want your image to be if you were completely liberated? I think mm-hmm. that's sort of what Beyoncé sort of doesn't allow us to frame ourselves and to think about, right, properly.
Yeah, I just remembered one of the names of the other speakers, Shala Lynch, who made the film Free Angela Davis and All Political Prisoners. And I felt that she kept coming back to this idea that she just doesn't want to talk about Beyoncé. It's not that, like, Beyoncé's there, Beyoncé's going to do her thing, and she has every right to do her thing, but it's like, I want to talk about Harriet Tubman as an action hero. Like, that's her next project, is like mm-hmm. making Harriet, the story of what Harriet Tubman did and the fact that Harriet Tubman used the fact that she was an invisibilized Black woman as a weapon to free her people. Like, this is an, she says, like, who needs James Bond when we have that, right? And it's not even that Beyoncé does or does not do what she does. It's just like, that's not interesting. That's not, you know, that's not the substance and the symbolic, you know, image making that feminism could and should look like. But we only have an hour a month. So I want to get into this issue of, you know, intra-Black woman calling each other terrorists. I remember that was one of the things that a lot of people said that they didn't like. They actually agreed with the sentiment that bell hooks raised, but they, because of the way, you know, Assata Shakur has became the first person by the FBI recently to be named a terrorist, right? And she's like a black liberation fighter who's in exile right now in Cuba. And it's a really problematic term to apply to black people, right? Because of the fraught history and the racial terrorism that black people, especially black people in the U.S., faced. So what do we think about, you know, my response to that would be just, you know, this is like an elder black feminist, like talking about doing her thing in cultural criticism for the past 30 years, just making a point, who's been talking about patriarchal terrorism for a really long time. So I don't really have a problem with it. But I just was wondering, in terms of shifting narratives, like, we know how that word gets taken up in the mainstream, and we know the inflammatory, you know, ideas it stirs up in the wake of kind of this 9/11 era that we now live in. So what do you guys think about that?
I personally feel like that's actually like an instance of her reclaiming space, you know, like taking that word back from the people that dish it around, like, and throw it at every single like brown person that they see in the airport, right? So I like her use of the term. It's sensationalist, but it's like, it's also a form of like, you know what, like, I'm going to use this term in a way that I think is actually accurate. And I think it's fine.
I don't know.
It's okay not to know.
I don't know. Going with that metaphor, you know, we were talking about during our meeting earlier this month, when we do our show planning meetings, like earlier in the month, we talk about these things. And Alyssa, I don't know who came up with this idea, but it was about how essentially Beyonce is taking sexuality and femininity for like hostage, essentially.
That was your idea, that was Victoria.
You know, which is true. Like, who gets to define sexuality? You know,
Beyonce.
Who gets to define what's hot and sexy? Oh, it's like playing a role in these videos and like, you know, having this kind of hair and these kinds of hips. And it's like, well, why can't I have that power? And how come everybody doesn't love me? You know?
Right.
Anyways, I'm not complaining. Really.
Okay, we're running out of time, but we have to talk about capitalism.
Right, of course.
So that was to me like where I think a lot of new wave feminists, or I guess feminists who want to really love Beyonce but still identify strongly as feminist, I think that's where they lose me. Because I think they're seduced by Beyonce because, as Bell Hooks said, she's so wealthy. She's like this 33-year-old wealthy woman. And I don't think, you know, the way that she's able to generate wealth off of her dancing and her music is so much part of why people are so obsessed with her. And not just her, right? Like her and Jay-Z and their little like private empire where they have like a helicopter that like takes them into Brooklyn, Nets game. Like it's a lot. And I think people look at that, you know, and they're both like black Americans and they're like, yeah, like this is an empire and I want in on it.
Right.
Go ahead, Simi.
I think we're also sort of minimizing the effect of TRL and MTV and sort of just the sort of mass media effect on our entire generation. I think to a certain extent we are maybe not the first generation that grew up sort of exposed and hyper exposed to all of this imagery, and it's deeply rooted in our idea in our identity and in our idea of what is, you know, culture and what is cultural. So it's, I mean, I think having people try to sort of take a step back and examine that's definitely a difficult exercise, and I think there's several layers to it as well. So that's why everybody loves Beyonce and Jay-Z.
And I feel like she's the one celebrity we love to hate and we love to love at the same time, and no matter what the topic is, you can't stop talking about her. Like, from the get-go, I mean, like, since she's come out and like Destiny's Child and when she went solo and everything, it was never a moment where Beyonce was not present somewhere in the media. And at that point, it was always good. It was like, look at her success, look how far she's come. And to the point where when everyone had their scandals and everyone had their dirt, she was nowhere in sight. So then I think for now, it's like we finally found something on her. So we have to capitalize on it and jump on it while it's still there and out in the open before it goes away forever.
Are you talking about the Solange?
Just everything in general. Just everything in general. Like her being a terrorist, her monopolizing femininity, her coming out as a feminist, her music videos, everything. It's either you love her, you hate her. You think she's a feminist? She's not a feminist. She's a harm to the cause. She is the cause. She's the woman we aspire to be, or she's not. But no matter what, it's like we always have to keep talking about Beyonce.
So she's become kind of like the benchmark for where pop culture female.
Yeah, and it
kind of
goes back to what Sydney said. It's the 2.0. It's like the Diet Cola that came out and we can't stop drinking. Yeah. Like, you get addicted to it. Whether it's the aspartame in it or whatever, you can't stop talking about it. I don't think that's ever going to stop.
Yeah, things that are pleasurable are not necessarily good for you.
Exactly.
And, yeah. What Bell Hooks said during the talk that really resonated with me is that, you know, even us, like, participating in this glam culture, like, you know, just general people, like, incorporating a little bit of Beyonce into our own lives, like, aspiring to be, you know, celebrities, aspiring for fame, aspiring for money and attention, like, us adopting these desires are actually like super dangerous and kind of like delusional and yeah. So.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. The talk is called Are You Still a Slave? It aired, it was live streamed on The New School on May 6th of this month. It's on YouTube. It's on The New School's website. It's really easy to find. If you just type in Bell Hooks, Janet Mock, or Bell Hooks, Are You Still a Slave? I'm sure you'll find it. Thank you all for participating in that discussion. And thank you, Janet Mock. And I love you.
I left for a living that I built myself. I thought of you. I called someone else. This is how it settles when the dust does wrong. We'll never find out. We'd rather not know.
Welcome back to CKUT 90.3 FM. That was Tao Nguyen. Tao and the Get Down, Stay Down from their 2013 album Weave the Common, and that was the song The Feeling Kind. So Tao Nguyen is a front woman of the Tao and the Get Down, Stay Down, and she has released several albums, both as a solo artist and in collaboration with other musicians, including Mira, the Get Down, Stay Down, and the Portland Cello Project. You're listening to Spitfire Women of Color Radio, only on CKUT 90.3 FM.
All right, so we have to wrap up for this month. I'd like to thank everyone in the studio here, Victoria, Mercedes, Alyssa, Lily, and Simi, who's joining us for the first time in, I guess, years. Am I right about that? I mean, not that long, I guess. Thanks for joining us for Asian Heritage Month, and basically, we're going to sign out now.
So you're listening to Warrior's Tongue by Masha's One. Masha One is a Singaporean-born artist who moved...
Masha One.
Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, sorry.
Masha One is a Singaporean-born artist who moved to Vancouver at a young age. She has produced three albums, the latest being Bootleg Culture. She has collaborated with many artists, including Miss Dynamite, Pharrell, and Talib Kweli.
Lastly, we would like to dedicate this show to Maya Angelou, poet, author, activist, who sadly passed away today.
Thank you, Maya.
Spitfire Women of Color Radio broadcasts every last Wednesday of the month at 6 p.m. on CKUT Radio 90.3 FM. You can write to us at spitfire@ckut.ca and check out www.spitfire.blogspot.com. Also, follow us on Twitter at Spitfire Radio.
Peace.
Watch this. War this evening, yin yang changing and creeping, no time for sleeping. My heart is heavy and deep and on the hustle like grind. Throw your sign when my chime go beep. All my people they find they got that street sense. Now they always on time, don't need no pretense. My steez is fresher than pine, scent to shine double back. Got that polish and that piece called time. Ooh, need me, bass of the rhythm, hearts beating.